Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:11 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time. Today is October 16th, and it is 30 years since the 1987 crash, or Black Monday. So that at least partly is responsible for why so many bearish reports have been crossing my desk over the last couple of weeks. That isn't to say, of course, that there aren't some rational arguments about why somebody might be bearish. But the more important consideration when we've addressed what all of the bearish reports are, that, for example, we have this high degree of complacency, that markets have been completely inert, that this has... But nevertheless, when we look at the... I think the most important point is that a consistent trend is a trend in motion. And if the market consists of a range and a breakout, and a range and a breakout, and those breakouts and ranges are relatively similar sized, and we've just had an important breakout and it continues to advance, as long as we get a similar sized reaction, which in at the moment is in the order of about between 50 and 80 points on the S&P 500, then there is no question really about whether this isn't still a consistent advance. Now, what would represent an inconsistency would be a larger pullback or a much bigger advance. Because, generally speaking, when people get the message, when you can see that we have had a range and a relatively similar sized breakout and a relatively similar sized range and a relatively similar sized breakout, well, and you can see there just Bloomberg popped up reliving Black Monday. So you know, the market is full of these comparisons. But generally speaking, the way that these trends tend to evolve is that the market gets the message and they say, well, we are in an environment which is increasingly being described as Goldilocks, which is not too hot, not too cold, just right, that inflation isn't picking up to any discernible extent, but that we have synchronized global economic expansion, and that that is generally positive for globally oriented businesses, and not least those that are in the resources sector or are generally speaking in the banking sector or in technology, and we have ample evidence of those sectors that are still on recovery trajectories. Copper, for example, has broken out today. And again, copper is one of those commodities that people have been really bearish about, that people have been saying, that the number of reports that I've seen at least that have been commenting to the effect that there is a surplus, there is no way the prices can go higher. Well, they must be backtracking in here today as it breaks out to new recovery highs. And after a comparatively short period of consolidation, that this was a relatively similar sized consolidation, but it has been really quite short. And there is now quite a large overextension relative to the trend mean, but this is increasingly looking like a momentum move that is being reignited. And it isn't just copper, but rather we're seeing an uptick in interest in the industrial metals generally. And if we look at zinc, for example, then zinc has broken away from its most recent range. It had that first step above the base for the first half of this year, and now it is resuming an upward trend. Even and if we look at, for example, lead, lead and zinc tend to have generally similar patterns, and lead is now coming to the upper side of its base. But nickel, for example, which has been the absolute laggard in terms of performance in the industrial metals, is above 10,000 and has firmed pretty impressively last week from that area, and this looks to be a potential catch-up play. So there is plenty of evidence that we're getting some momentum coming back into the commodity complex. And the oil sector is also worthy of consideration here. So oil prices were not quite able to hold the advance in here today. There is this battle playing out here. On the one hand, in Iraq, you have the Baghdad government trying to, I think, influence the Kurdish drive towards independence. And they obviously want to try and contain that risk, and that represents a bullish factor for oil prices. But of course, we also know that the higher prices go, and most particularly as they get back up towards that psychological $60 area, that it is going to have a supply response from unconventional supply in the domestic U.S. continent. So that is obviously a bearish factor as well. Meanwhile, the Saudi Arabians are wondering about how they're going to IPO 5% of the company, and there are rumors at least that Beijing has made an outright bid for all 5%, so they may not have to IPO at all. Or they may just decide to ramp up and sell 10% of it. But that also is an important consideration, that Saudi Arabia is selling its family jewels. And when is the best time to IPO a company? Well, it's something that David has said for many a year. It's when you think you can get more for it than you think it's worth. And that is certainly potentially the case with oil prices. But nevertheless, prices have come back quite a significant amount, and they are firming from the region of the upper side of this year's range. So there is the potential for some additional upside, but something that I've contended for some time is that the most likely scenario is that we're going to have volatile ranging, and that significant moves on the upside are unlikely to be sustained because there is so much additional supply becomes economic at just marginally higher levels than we are at right now. And that's a really very important consideration, that even if we have a bullish environment in the short term, that the medium term outlook is still that we're likely to have a volatile environment. So when we then just bring all of that back to the initial conversation about where are we in terms of this cycle, we know that there has been a flood of money moving into ETFs, and that the variety of ETFs that is available has proliferated over the last decade. You can basically now get an ETF to track anything. And of course, what people don't tend to understand is that ETFs are by definition a derivative. But that is not how people look at them. And we know that this has been a liquidity-fueled rally, and we also know that we are in a period of time where policy uncertainty has increased. So US 10-year treasuries have been holding below 2.4% for more than half of this year and pulled back from that level, yields at least pulled back from that level last week. And really, a sustained move above 2.4% will be required to signal that we're back in a supply-dominated environment. When we think about the fact that the VIX index is below 10, and it has been below 10 for a good part of this year, and that the number of times that it has done that previously is dwarfed by the number of times it has done it this year. Well, this is a rather strange environment, and we know that that is the case, and we know that a part of the reason for that is because of all of this money flowing into these short VIX ETFs. So, for example, XIV is accelerating higher because it's a one-way bet on volatility, and this is not going to last indefinitely, but at the same time, there's no evidence that it's over. And this is the important thing about dislocations in the market and bull markets generally. It's that they can go on for longer than anyone initially anticipates. So there is certainly a penchant in the market right now for comparing the current environment to 1987. But there is an important characteristic that if we go back and look at what exactly happened before the crash in 1987, then I think we're going to get a little bit of intelligence that is, I think, really worth looking at. So if we start off and look at from 1985 all the way up to, say, 1988, then what we're presented with was a market that had gone up considerably prior to the crash. That the S&P 500 in 1985 was close to 186, and by the time it peaked in September of 1987, it was at 388. So it isn't quite a doubling, but it's not that far off it either. And it went up 50% in the 9 months up to that peak. So that was a phenomenal bull market. And we have had a bull market this year, and it has been reasonably impressive, but it's nothing on that, quite that scale. So that's one thing that I think is worth pointing out, that we do not have the same degree of overextension here. We haven't had the same massive rush in. But that doesn't mean that we can't have that. What's to say that that this Goldilocks environment, as it has been described, will not persist for a while longer? That you have central bankers like Janet Yellen saying that the absence of inflation has been a bit of a mystery, that they don't really understand why inflation is not coming back up, and that it would be rather foolhardy to raise rates aggressively. There's speculation that some people in the ECB don't want to see quantitative easing exceed more than 3 trillion euros, but considering that that represents an additional 600 billion from what they've already done, then that would at least suggest that tapering might be pushed out a little bit further. And considering the political issues that are assailing Europe right now, with everything from separatist movements in Spain to rising populism in places like Italy or indeed in Austria today, and the fact that if what is considered a far-right party has gained entry to the Bundestag in Germany for the first time since the Second World War, that I think it is probably in the halls of the ECB, which is literally across the street from the the Bundesbank in Frankfurt, that perhaps it is not the most opportune time to be taking money out of the system. So that at least could suggest that we may not be yet at at the kind of acceleration. And maybe if we look at the Nasdaq, which has been perhaps the best performer, then we can see, for example, that since 1986 it has gone up about 50%. So that is certainly from 2016, I should say, it has gone up about 50%, and that's certainly an impressive advance. What we can also say for certain is that prior to the crash in 1987, there was a loss of momentum. Well, we haven't yet had a loss of momentum. This is still a market that is breaking higher, sustaining upward breaks, and so far it continues to do that. Is it somewhat overbought relative to the trend mean at the current period of time? Absolutely it is. Could it pull back towards the region of the trend mean in a process of mean reversion? Yes, absolutely. But do we have crash-type scenarios? I think that in order for that to occur, we would have to have more aggressive tightening by central banks, because what some people are saying, and it's a very relevant point, is that ETF trading now represents about 50% of trading. But what they don't also tend to lump in with that is that the algorithmic trading is also a massive source of liquidity in this market. And when we're talking about leverage, then there are two big things that are used to size positions. One is volatility. Well, volatility is very low, so that means that that factor will allow position sizes to be larger. And then you have interest rates. And if you're borrowing money to leverage it in the stock market, or indeed the bond markets, or in any other market, then obviously the price you pay for that leverage is going to be a factor in how large your position can be. And when you have very low interest rates and a very and I think a very low rates right across the yield curve, then you can have large positions. And that is, I think, where we could have a tipping point, is that when we do start to see interest rates moving higher, when they do choke off the economic expansion, as is inevitable, that central banks are the number one cause of death in bull markets, medium or secular, regardless of a time period. That if we are in a period of synchronized global economic expansion right now, that it will eventually end. But there's no sign of it yet. And in the meantime, we could see markets going up considerably before all of these bearish points that have been raised in the last few weeks are realized. When we see that markets are breaking upwards to new high ground, and in the absence of downward dynamics or losses of consistency or type 1, type 2, or type 3 trend ending characteristics, then we give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And I think it's also worth simply keeping an eye on gold prices, because gold has firmed from the region of the trend mean. And it was in negative territory in here today, having been up for seven consecutive sessions. So there is now a potential for a pause in consolidation. And the more important point is whether it can hold the low that we saw last week or at the end of the week before. If it can hold that low, well then the potential for a retest of the high that we saw back in September and indeed back in November of last year will be certainly be bolstered, but it will need to hold those lows if the bulls are to be vindicated. And Theresa May is in Brussels today, and we are at crunch time in terms of where are these Brexit negotiations going to go. And when we look at the euro pound, well, the euro posted a rather large downside Q reversal on Thursday, and it followed through on the downside to a modest extent on Friday, and was pretty much unchanged in here today. Well, if and there has been a great deal of bearishness about the potential for a an agreement to be reached, expressed in the media, but if the euro is to be given the benefit of the doubt, and then it would at least need to sustain a move above 90 cents. And so far it hasn't done that. But of course, this is a fast-moving environment, and politicians do not have the same consistency in their movements as stock market prices, or indeed financial market prices. So we can probably anticipate that this is going to be volatile. But I think that when we simply take a step back and look at the pace of technological innovation, what is coming down the pipe, what kind of an effect that can have on productivity levels, and generally enhancing both productivity and reducing costs, then that's generally very positive for stocks. And it obviously represents a challenge for politicians. And these are, I think, two very important themes, one positive, one potentially negative, that really do need to be monitored. But then we have the additional point that central banks are sitting squarely in the middle between the two. And we have been in a period of time since 2009 where they have made abundant liquidity available, and they are as interested in preserving the gains that they have made as they are in preserving their personal legacies. So then there is the possibility that this period of liquidity provision could take much longer to unwind than many people anticipate. And then there is, I think, the most important point is that if a consistent trend is a trend in motion, then we give the benefit of the doubt to the upside until we have evidence to the contrary. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.